it affects a whole lot more than just, you know, the industry being paid by the hour.
A dollar increase in the state's minimum wage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, December 31st. Good evening, I'm Annie Feit. Also tonight, an unexpected home delivery for Anchorage's municipal attorney.
There wasn't a lot of thinking that went on from my perspective. We just laid Jeanette down, grabbed some towels, and we were off to the races.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by APU.
The Alaska Supreme Court has rejected a proposed ballot initiative that sought to ban commercial shore gill nets and set nets in urban non-subsistence areas. The decision reverses a 2014 lower court ruling that ordered the initiative be certified by the lieutenant governor, who had previously declined to certify it. The measure had been slated to appear on the 2016 ballot. The High Court, in a decision today, siding with the lieutenant governor's office, said the proposed initiative would result in a giveaway program of salmon stock from set netters to other fishermen. The court says it would also significantly limit the freedom of the legislature and Board of Fisheries to make allocation decisions. The Alaska Fisheries Conservation Alliance, which was behind the proposal, expressed disappointment with the decision. Minimum wage workers in Alaska will get a pay raise of a dollar an hour starting tomorrow. As KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports, the wage hike affects more than hourly workers.
In 2014, Alaskans voted for $1 increases to go into effect in 2015 and 2016. The first raised it from $7.75 per hour to $8.75. The second, to $9.75 an hour, goes into effect January 1, 2016. Joe Dunham is statewide supervising investigator of wage and hour administration at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. He says affected jobs include some in fish processing, fast food, and home health care. He says the change also affects workers paid by how much they produce instead of an hourly rate.
For example, if a sheetrock hanger gets 20 cents a square foot, he still has to be paid at least minimum wage for all hours worked in the pay period. So if he has a bad day or a week or a pay period where he's running out of supplies and, you know, not really hanging a lot of sheetrock, all hours work times the minimum wage is the least amount his paycheck can be. So it actually applies to all employees.
Dunham says the change also affects employees who are exempt from overtime pay requirements.
For example, a manager being paid on a salary basis. The minimum salary requirement is twice the current minimum wage based on a 40-hour work week. So $9.75 an hour times 2 times 40 is $780 a week minimum being paid on a salary basis. So it affects a whole lot more than just, you know, the industry being paid by the hour.
Dunham says some employers do try to get around paying a salaried person working a 40-hour work week the annual minimum of $20,280.
Home health care, for example, there's a lot of assisted living homes that pay their employees on a salary basis, and that salary basis doesn't even equal minimum wage and overtime for all hours worked. You know, let's say you work 24-hour shifts 7 days a week and the employer's paying you $1,200 a month. I'm sorry, that's not nearly enough for all those hours.
Dunham says the state respects the position employees may find themselves in with an employer who seems unaware of or unwilling to make the required change, and he says they can help.
Many of them are afraid of losing their job, even though it might be sub-minimum wage, but it might be all they have. And we've got ways of, you know, contacting the employer without directly putting the jeopardy on the employee. So we're not going to kick the doors down, especially if it's going to cost somebody their job, you know.
People can contact Wage in our offices in Fairbanks, Wasilla, or Juneau, or call the Anchorage office at 907-269-4900. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
One of the dangers tied to drug abuse is the risk of transmitting disease through needle sharing. Dirty needles are a common vehicle for HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and other serious infections. A proven solution is providing access to clean needles and a safe place to dispose of dirty ones. KBBI's Quentin Chandler reports a Homer doctor wants to start the community's first syringe exchange program.
Alaska has a bad track record when it comes to IV drug use. Heroin abuse alone doubled in the state between 2007 and 2013. On a global scale, the World Health Organization blames 10% of new HIV cases on IV drug abuse, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the same for 60% of new hepatitis C cases in the United States.
And the one that we see most commonly in Alaska is hepatitis C.
That's Dr. Sarah Spencer, who works in addiction medicine at Homer Medical Center and Ninilchik Tribal Clinic. She wants to start a syringe exchange program, a place people can drop off their used needles in exchange for clean ones.
And also other sterile things like sterile cotton and things that they would use in the process of injecting IV drugs.
She says exchanges reduce cases of HIV and hepatitis by between 30 and 50%.
About 1,000 people in Alaska are diagnosed with hepatitis C every year. It's actually significantly more contagious than HIV. HIV is still certainly around, but it's not nearly as prevalent as hepatitis C.
On top of viruses, Spencer says dirty needles can also cause bacterial infections that are even more common and can be more dangerous.
Those can occur even if someone is not sharing a needle.
Say someone is using an old needle over and over again. The needle gets dirty, and they may not take simple precautions like using alcohol wipes to clean the injection site.
And that bacteria gets introduced underneath the skin with the needle and can cause, the most common thing we see is skin infections, like abscesses and boils under the skin caused by staph bacteria.
Spencer says those infections often lead to emergency room visits, occasionally blood poisoning, infection of the heart valves,
which we call endocarditis, and from there can actually spread through the whole body and cause abscesses in your brain or lungs, really horrible, life-threatening diseases that are very difficult to treat, even with antibiotics.
Spencer says a syringe exchange program could stop that from happening. There are only three in Alaska. They're in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. But could an exchange program unintentionally encourage drug use? Spencer says no. Exchanges actually help decrease drug use because addicts can be steered into treatment. The cost saving, Spencer mentioned, comes from a drop in hospital bills.
Many of the people who are using IV drugs are not in a position where they're able to work. Many of them don't have health insurance. And so when they have a life-threatening illness and they seek emergency care for that, the taxpayer is going to pay the bill for that.
It's impossible to say how many people would use a syringe exchange in Homer. Spencer says the average number of IV drug users in the country is between 1 and 2% of the population. In Homer, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the adult coloring craze hits Haines.
We've always had coloring books, but we have not had the cool coloring books. And people have flocked to get them.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
The North Pole is melting, according to many news outlets, but Walt Meyer, a research scientist for NASA and co-author of NOAA's 2015 Arctic Report Card on sea ice, says that's not quite accurate.
I've seen the stories on that, and they're kind of a little misleading. What they're basically saying, you know, there's a really strong low pressure over Iceland, and what that's doing, that's funneling warm air kind of around the low and up into the Arctic and into the North Pole. And the air temperatures at the North Pole are slightly above freezing.
A buoy near the North Pole recorded a high temperature of 33 degrees yesterday. Meyer says temperatures are generally much lower this time of year.
You know, you normally are minus 20, minus 3 degrees Celsius up at the North Pole this time of year. And so that's a really anomalously warm weather system that's moving through there.
According to both NASA and NOAA scientists, 2014 was the warmest year since 1880, with 2015 on track to be even warmer. The anomaly of warm air funneling up from Iceland has caused some surface melt at the North Pole. But Meyer clarifies the North Pole hasn't turned to slush yet.
When you have temperatures like that, you would have some surface melt. But, you know, it's still ice covered. You still have, you know, probably a good couple meters or more, 6 to 8 feet of ice up there at least.
The low pressure causing the spike in temperatures at the North Pole is the same weather system that recently led to blizzards in the Southwest, tornadoes in Texas, and flooding in the Midwest. The system is expected to move off the pole by next week, bringing temperatures back down to the normal 25 below. A lifelong Alaskan and a relative newcomer to the state combined forces recently to make a short film called Arctic Contrast, winning a video contest sponsored by the Norwegian Embassy in Washington, D.C. Lorelei Ivanov is from Unalakleet and was the news director at KNOM in Nome when Ben Matheson went to work for her as a reporter in 2010. Matheson says the embassy wanted to showcase the Arctic for those who haven't seen it. He says he and Ivanov wanted to capitalize on their very different perspectives on the Arctic.
We did try to hit on that theme. We called our film Arctic Contrast and tried to show that the Arctic and Alaska is a place of fabulous wealth, but it's also a place of financial poverty and many cash-poor economies. It's a place where there are newcomers, but it's a place where people have been for thousands of years. And around this time of year, you think it's a pretty dark place, but in the summer, it's the most brilliant. You get the most brilliant light ever. So it's a land of rugged individuals, but also of a place of the strongest, most tight-knit, helpful communities. And that's part of what stands out to me and part of what keeps reporting in Alaska and figuring out new things in Alaska super exciting is that you have the full spectrum of just about anything.
Have you worked on other videos, films in the past, Ben, or was this a new experience for you?
I mean, I've spent the last few years working in bush radio, and I've had a chance to see these fantastic landscapes and talk to interesting people in, you know, the coolest of situations on sled dog races, on boats in the Bering Sea. But it's largely been a radio effort for me. So I've dabbled with visual media, and I really, really, really enjoy editing something together visually. So this was a bit of a challenge, but something that I've dabbled in and always wanted to sort of improve my skills on.
How long did it take you to compile all the different segments of video that you put together in this?
The competition's been going on for 3 months. It launched in August, but I found out about it in late October, and I emailed Lorelei 3 weeks before it was due. So we were working, you know, like we have before, on deadline, trying to do a project that represents the Arctic well within 3 weeks. So in a sense, we've been working on it in newsroom conversations and friendly conversations for years. I have been collecting footage in some capacity for years. You know, I showed off a little bit of Shishmaref, which has experienced some pretty serious climate-related erosion, some footage from Anchorage and Nome and Unalakleet and Bethel, kind of up and down, you know, southwest and western Alaska. But we had 3 weeks to put it together, and with a deadline, we were able to synthesize those ideas and fit it within the 3 minutes. Lorelei also brought in two young people from Unalakleet to bring some, you know, just bring some heart and soul and reality to this. It's Katya Simonson and her husband Thomas were our two narrators.
How surprising was it that you won?
There were 11 entries, and I was really impressed. There were ones that visited Kivalina. There were some that told a bit of a love story that took place on the Dalton Highway. There was really well-produced, visually stunning stuff. So I was surprised. I did not think we were going to win. And when I got the call from the Norwegian guy in Washington, D.C., I was so excited, so excited.
Alaskans Ben Matheson and Lorelei Ivanov speaking with Lori Townsend. The pair recently won a Norwegian embassy video contest with their short film Arctic Contrast. They'll travel to Tromsø, Norway on January 20th to attend an Arctic conference. Their film will also be featured in an international film festival in Tromsø. You can watch Arctic Contrast on our website, alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Well, each December, there's a spike in impaired driving-related accidents, so consider the real cost of driving impaired. Could result in a loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Anchorage Municipal Attorney Bill Falsey got a quick lesson in labor and delivery this week. He and his wife, Alaska Dispatch News reporter Jeanette Lee Falsey, expected to have their baby in the hospital. Falsey says Jeanette woke up at about 3 in the morning on December 29th with contractions that were far apart. By 6 a.m., the couple had called Bill's mom to come to the house and were getting ready to go to the hospital. Then Jeanette's water broke and the contractions quickly became more urgent.
10 minutes apart, 9 minutes apart, 8, 8, 8, 5, 3, 2, crowning, ears, face, head, baby. And from water breaking to delivery was probably tops 10 minutes.
James was born on the bathroom floor. Falsey says he didn't have time to consult Google for tips on delivering a baby at home.
There wasn't a lot of thinking that went on from my perspective. We just laid Jeanette down, grabbed some towels. My mom walked in with the 911 call, and we were off to the races.
Falsey says James' delivery was a big contrast to the couple's first child, Stella, who took her time coming into the world. Falsey says Jeanette was calm through the whole ordeal.
We finished, and she started laughing.
Really?
Yeah. I think there was a relief component, and there was a did that really just happen component.
A paramedic and firefighters from Fire Station 7 arrived a few minutes after baby James was born. They cut the cord, made sure the baby was doing well, and took Jeanette, Bill, and the baby to Providence Hospital. James weighed in at 7 pounds, 7 ounces. A new trend has landed in Haines. Adult coloring is wildly popular pretty much everywhere, including Alaska, and the babbling book on Main Street can't keep the boutique pages in stock. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has the story.
Stressful day? Take out all your frustrations and anxiety on an intricate drawing of flowers. Wait, that can't be right. Oh, but it is. Coloring for adults is pretty new, and it's exactly what it sounds like. Colorists, as they're called, use colored pencils or markers to decorate detailed drawings of everything from landscapes to animals to abstract images. It doesn't matter if you color outside the lines. The point of it all is stress relief.
It's something that calms the mind, and you concentrate on something that has to do with colors and light, and it calms the soul.
Emily Zimbrick is a licensed professional counselor at Lynn Canal Counseling. Not only does she recommend coloring to clients, she also uses it as a way to relieve built-up pressures from daily life. In other words, she practices what she preaches.
I've had a something I'm dealing with here in the office, I do the colors. And the colors are calming. You know, depending on whether I use pencils or magic markers, they it's all different.
She flips through her book, showing off the brightly colored shapes she's inked. She says coloring offers a vacation from your worries.
I think a short term, it's like a Band-Aid on a cut. But I think long term, it gives you a practice in self-care. And any practice in self-care, much like exercise or travel, it has long-term benefits.
Zimbrick says it also offers a little nostalgia and often brings back good memories. And like childhood coloring, she says she thinks this trend will stick around for a while. Down the street at the Babbling Book, the designer books are a hot commodity. Kelly Mitchell has worked there for 5 years and seen book trends come and go, but nothing like this.
This one is the color therapy. It calls itself an anti-stress coloring book, and it looks to me like a bunch of well-drawn doodles. Mostly it is women buying them, and they are buying them because they have them at their desks. They're using them for what they say on the cover, color therapy. They're using them to relax.
The hip hobby offers a way to be creative without the stress of having to be creative. The heavy lifting, the drawing, is done. Now stressed out adults are free to peacefully fill in the rest as they choose. Some of the new coloring books are touted as a chance to create beautiful works of art that you can then hang in your house or give away to friends. But if you're in it for the therapeutic value, it's the distraction and the process that's important. Mitchell says for the bookstore, the trend picked up a couple months ago.
We've always had coloring books, but we have not had the cool coloring books. Liz ordered those up, and they've been in the front by the calendars, and people have flocked to get them. And then, of course, the next question is, have you got colored pencils?
They do, but the last shipment sold out in one day.
But yeah, we have loads. We have, like, big coloring books for little kids, and we got little tiny coloring books for, like, you can put it in your pocket and have it on the ferry. There's coloring books that are postcards. But I do believe we are out of colored pencils again.
Three of the top 10 best-selling books on Amazon this week were coloring books. Names like Enchanted Forest and Secret Garden are the most popular, but there's even a Game of Thrones coloring book. Somehow, that doesn't seem very serene. Whether you think the trend is fleeting and silly or a legitimate soothing technique, bookstore owner Liz Haywood is enjoying the bottom line. The books range from less than $5 to about $20 for the really trendy ones.
Oh, when we order, yes, I look at the bestseller lists every week and the different catalogs I get from my publishers and wholesalers.
The Harry Potter craze is the only other comparable movement that the bookstore has seen, Haywood says, but it's hard to compare coloring books to anything else.
It's hard for me to look at it in terms of any other trends because they aren't books. They're coloring books, but they aren't really books.
So whether you're in it for the Zen appeal or the trend appeal, color on. It's good for your health. In Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
Another Juno restaurant empire is taking form with the opening of an Italian restaurant next month in the space recently occupied by the Silver Bow Bakery. In Bocca al Lupo will be the newest restaurant venture by the people who run the Rookery Cafe, Panhandle Provisions, and the Taqueria. KTOO's Lisa Fu got a taste of what's to come.
In the kitchen of Panhandle Provisions on Seward Street, Bo Schooler cracks a few eggs in a big metal bowl. He's making ricotta gnocchi.
A cheese-based form of gnocchi, which is an Italian dumpling.
He stirs up the eggs, whole milk ricotta, and some salt. Schooler grates in some grana padano.
It's like Parmesan's younger cousin.
Next comes the flour. Gnocchi is usually associated with potato, but can be made with other ingredients like spinach or sweet potato. It's treated just like any other pasta, boiled till done and tossed with a sauce. The Rookery Cafe has offered the ricotta gnocchi with a ragu made with Alaskan pork from the Matsu Valley.
When we get the Italian place open, we'll always have one kind of gnocchi on the menu.
Schooler went to Calabria, Italy in 2008 to learn the basics of Italian cuisine. For the restaurant, Schooler says he'll stay true to the roots of Italian cooking while also incorporating Alaskan ingredients. He's working with friends who produce traditional-style fermented Italian cheese curds.
The mozzarella that you can make with their curds is, like, I call it life-changing. It blows you away, so we'll probably have a real traditional, like, margarita-style pizza with the San Marzano tomatoes and the fresh-made mozzarella with this fermented curd. And the Alaska sea salt, and thin garlic and stuff like that. And we might play around with smoked salmon on a pizza just because it's Alaska and you gotta do something like that.
In Boca al Lupo is Italian for break a leg, though it literally translates to in the wolf's mouth. This will be the third restaurant opening for Travis Smith. Many of Juno's favorite restaurants are owned and operated by the same groups of people. Twisted Fish, Hangar on the Wharf, and Pizzeria Roma all have at least one common owner, as do Tracy's Crab Shack, Saffron, Salt, and McGivney's. Smith started the Rookery Cafe in 2010. Schooler joined the restaurant a couple years later. They opened the deli Panhandle Provisions in June 2014. The Taqueria opened February 2015. Smith says once you have the mechanics down for one restaurant, it's possible to open more.
We couldn't operate the Taqueria if we didn't have another location where we could store their product off-site and have some prep work done, because they just don't have the space. And similarly, we couldn't do what we're doing in the Rookery if I hadn't moved the bakery to a different location in 2013.
In the past couple of years, the restaurant group has gone from 12 to about 50 employees. But not everything Smith and Schooler touch turns to gold.
We did have a little food cart operation that we shut down after a month that took us a year and a half to open. It was called the Chowder Shack, and we were just going to be selling our halibut chowder, but it turns out that that's not something that people just wanted to buy and walk around and eat.
Smith is confident they have the staff and ability to run in Boca al Lupo, and he doesn't plan to open any more restaurants.
We're going to stop at three, you know, essentially our three children. The family is done.
Back at the kitchen, Bo Schooler cooks the gnocchi in a small pot of boiling salted water.
Once they're floating at the top, then they're done.
He ladles some into a small bowl and grates some cheese.
So that's just pasta water, butter, and then grana padana. And that's kind of how they do it over there.
I plunge a fork into the bowl.
Mmm, that's amazing.
In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jocelyn Estes and Lori Townsend in Anchorage, Quentin Chandler in Homer, Emily Russell in Nome, Jillian Rogers in Haines, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Pat Yak is our web editor. And I'm Annie Feit. Happy New Year.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, and maintaining an open forum for public expressions, opinions, and concerns regarding subsistence, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29, 2016. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.